Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me.
Is my cousin Tino.
Who's wearing his hat today.
Wearing my hat. Darn right. It's a thing. It's just a thing. I have people that, I stop wearing it, so when people say, hey, I don't recognize you without your hat, I said, that's good. Buy me a drink.
So we're talking to Robertson Wirt again today.
We are.
We talked to him in January, on January 15th, if you want to go back and listen to that show, folks.
Yes, and we're talking about compassionate civilization, how to get there. And out of all the topics, I think, certainly when I have a friend that texts me every Sunday night, wants to know what we're going to be doing, and I told him compassionate civilization with Robertson Wirt, a gentleman named Robertson Wirt, who wrote some great books we're going to talk about in a minute, and has done some great work all over the world, which we're going to talk about, but he sort of chuckles in response, as much as you can chuckle in a text, and saying, yeah, well, you know, certainly the tone of the world today doesn't seem, you know, when you have an administration that is perfectly comfortable with cutting meals on wheels, it's like, this is, and on every day, Robertson. Good morning, Robertson. I guess we get to say hello.
Good morning,
how are you?
Mike.
I went to a seminar, Richard Rohr, before the election, and they didn't talk politics hardly at all. I guess you'd say they were sort of mystically inclined Catholic folks, but, also a lot of other different religions. But what Richard Rohr said was he said, and I think this is why I would start this out. He said about Donald Trump, he said he ridiculed a guy for his disability, publicly ridiculed someone for their disability. And then he said, what else do you need to know? Meaning, what else do you need to know about a man who would do that? And of course, now we've had a whole year of that being what everyone seems as leadership, abusing anybody who disagrees with you, insulting people, threatening people, buying silence, whatever.
The meme that I agree with mostly is the one that I keep seeing, not often enough. It said, I thought this alone, the poster of this particular, I thought this alone, you know, the Trump mocking the disabled reporter. He said, I thought this alone was the end of it. This was the end of it right here. We are talking to Robertson Wirt here on Democratic Perspective this morning. Robertson is the New York University Wagner Adjunct Professor of Innovative Leadership and founder facilitator of the Collaborative for Compassionate Civilization. He has done some work with the East-West Center, among others, and the UN. Mr. Wirt is also a Fulbright Senior Specialist assisting universities overseas and advisor to trusted sharing and social media startups. He's worked in Malaysia. He's worked in, with NGOs, all over the world. Worked
with the UN, too.
The organization. That's right. The Organizational and Community Development, Rural and Urban Development for Non-Governmental Organizations and Project Management and Policy Formation and Advice and Group Facilitation. He's written a lot of books, and we're going to talk about, we talked about one of those last times, A Compassionate Civilization, the Urgency of Sustainable Development and Mindful Activism, Reflections and Recommendations. And what I like about the book, among other things, is that it's kind of a workbook. That whole Reflections and Recommendations part is, because that's certainly, in my texter yesterday who questioned such a topic, Robertson predicted that when he wrote the book and said, look, guys, here's a method. Here's a workbook for you. This is how we get there. So I'm going to, the big question that sort of can be asked six or seven different ways. And I told you before the show that I heard Judy Woodruff on PBS ask Jimmy Carter, speaking of men who work in your, people who work in your field.
The compassion field,
Mike. Compassion field. Yeah, well, that's I don't think there's a lot of work out there. But the, not now. Maybe it's, but it's even more necessary. Go to Port, and Robertson is being so nice and quiet. He says, okay, the sooner these, later these guys will be quiet and give me a chance to talk. But the question is, and the question remains, and we want to, we have lots of questions, but the question is, in a time when there seems to be so little compassion within our own country and other countries, how do we get to, get us going on that workbook. How do we get to that compassionate civilization?
It's not just the United States and Donald Trump. It's a whole series of, we call them strongmen, but they're basically dictators all over the world. And when there's an increasing nationalism in Poland and Hungary and Turkey and Philippines, craziness, not just the United States, Robert. So, how do you relate to that? How do we get in what seems a whole world moving against compassion? How do we get to a compassionate civilization?
Well, gentlemen, it's good to be back with you, Steve and Mike. Yes, good question.
Yes.
Well, you know, the word compassion can mean different things to different people. When I use the word compassion, I'm not just talking about feeling empathy or feeling nice about people. I'm talking about taking action needed to relieve other people's suffering and one's own suffering. So I'm really focused on action. Compassion in the Buddhist definition is to relieve the suffering of all beings. So that's what why I'm using it, because it's so powerful. You know, let's focus on where is the suffering and then how do we relieve that suffering. You know, everybody has negative emotions of greed and fear and hatred. And so if we're going to focus on relieving suffering, we have to acknowledge that there are always going to be the people who say, hell no, you know, I'm interested in myself and my group, you know, us white people or us Christians or us Americans, you know, my tribe. But as you mentioned, I've worked all over the world. I work in 55 countries, so I kind of know that people are people everywhere, you know. And we all desire happiness, food, shelter. We love our care about our kids, and so it's not rocket science, you know. If we're going to build a world that works for everybody, you know, how do we do it? So starting local, but then also working at the national level and the international level. But it doesn't mean it's easy. You know, it's not like, oh, well, if we feel good about people or then all will be well. No, you know, it's a kind of battle between the forces of illusion and delusion and greed, hatred, and fear, and the forces of concern for others, for kindness, for compassion and action. And so I've been doing this for 50 years. I'm sure you both have your histories, you know, of your activism. I've been, and I find I still am motivated. You know, I'm 73, and I'm excited.
You
know,
you have to be, Robertson. I think you know that. I'm 68, and I'm not about to quit. One of the things I loved about your book is that, well, you can't. You just can't. As soon as you do, I don't know what I would, how I would feel about myself.
Yeah.
The epilogue to your book, Our Crisis, Our Challenge, Our Crusade, you start with the rather familiar quote, "The arc of history is bent toward justice," but you say it is equally bent toward tolerance, it is equally bent toward participation and sustainability. You talk about the eventually good must triumph over evil, right over wrong, tolerance over fear, justice over greed, equality over pride, and sustainability over destruction. This is your definition, Robertson Work, in his book, on this is the crisis and the challenge, and that it also becomes our crusade. But one of your solutions, and this is one of the things I want to talk about today, because I think this goes to the heart of our earlier question, and that is, you know, how do we get a more compassionate world in a world that seems to be going the other direction as fast as it can? And you talked about not just, you talked about a redefinition of human itself. In other words, we used to ask the question in my humanities classes, is the human being basically good or basically evil? And I think basically not good. Evil might be too strong a word, but not most students, college-age students in the 70s and 80s when I was going to school, raised their hand on the negative side, that the negativity you just mentioned is everyone has negative thoughts, but they are paramount in thinking. It's more of a selfish world. The 80s have never gone away, I don't think. So how do we reinvent the human being itself? How do we get new humans, as you say?
I think the question is what Mike said, Rob, is that the world seems to be going in a different direction. Hatred, anxiety, nationalism seem extremely popular. They work for people. They brought regimes to power all over the world. We have some counter indication. But the question is how we get from where we are to where you're talking about going.
Robertson, are you on the line? It sounds like you were breaking up.
Did we lose him?
While we wait for Robertson to clear up here, we're going to talk a little more about this book and his collection of books. Robertson has been in his retirement, but in his work, he has both written extensively in UN documents. He has contributed to all sorts of the United Nations is just where you want someone like Robertson that has the ability to find ways to bring people together. The UN, the United Nations, and the right wing in the United States makes a lot of fun of the United Nations, believes it's a threat to our national security. Some of us believe there is nothing stronger, there is nothing that helps our national security more than talking to other countries. We have the a book he wrote called Burnout Never. What we were just talking about, Burnout ? Never, a quick guide to a compassionate, mindful activism. And I think this is as important as anything. As I talk to folks, as I talk to Democrats, you get tired. You say, look, okay, they're cutting meals on wheels. They're cutting meals on wheels, for God's sakes. They're cutting school lunches. How do you fight that? How do you explain to someone else? How do you explain to a gun-toting right-winger that he should care about other people?
Are you back, Rob?
I'm back. You know, for my view is that what we see is a coalition of the billionaire class, white supremacists, and the evangelicals. But that's not all of us. You know, that's a very small group. So I think most people aren't billionaires, they're not white racists, and they're not evangelicals. So
excellent
I think
point.
Those of us who aren't have to stand up and speak and act, you know, and stand up for people who are being hurt.
I think that's important, Rob. But how do you structure this? I guess in reading your book, I mean, in other words, we have the problem. The problem is that the world is a blankety-blank mess, and cruelty seems sort of in a popular now. I mean, we have a president who celebrates his cruelty. He's basically a sadist in terms of hurting people. And that's what the public see as the leader of the United States.
Yep.
But he's not the only guy out there. A lot of the leadership of the world now seems particularly bad. I mean, we don't have Nazis or Stalin or something like that. But it's also not good. And what do you say to people who support that, Rob?
Well, that's one question. I don't think we should spend our energy responding to that group. You know, we need to work with the majority who are not in that group. As I said, there's a minority of the wealthy, the racist, and the religious right, but that's not most of us. So I think those of us in the majority need to take back our government. You know, we need to get out the vote. We need to take care of people at the local level in our neighborhoods, our families, working through nonprofits, working with the UN, working with the party, the Democratic Party, you know, as an activist. So there's so much to do. I don't think we should spend our time talking to the people who are in such delusion and illusion, you know, and are trapped in their negative emotions. We need to take back our country, take back our economy, take back our democracy, and I believe we can do it. You know, these young people in Parkland are showing us that youth, even the innocence of youth, can speak out for justice and peace. And as an old guy, you know, I'm going to back them, and I'm not going to expect them to lead. I'm going to lead also, and you know, that's just as you're leading. And I really appreciate your show. That now that Sinclair is taking over the local media houses and turning it into state propaganda, shows like yours are more and more critical, you know, because you're raising an alternative set of questions and narratives.
I don't think people understand about Sinclair Media, which I think owns, I may be wrong on the statistic, folks, but I think it's 136 radio stations now, and I mean television stations. And so you hear about Fox News, and everybody knows, you know, if you like Fox News, you don't like Fox News. Everybody knows what it is, I think, at least in broadly. But the move of Sinclair Media to take over, they've been allowed to buy huge, vast numbers of radio stations, and they're even more right-wing than Fox News.
Well,
they're more discreet.
They're going to deliberately, and they are unabashedly, and that's why they were given the rights to more and more stations by the FCC. They are going to lie for the president.
And they got caught recently with all their stations. All the news guys came out and read the same statement attacking fake news. I mean, and it sounded like, you know, a North Korean propaganda issue.
It sounded like a 1980s Pravda. Go ahead, Robinson.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
You're right. I quite agree with you, gentlemen, that we're in a mess at that level. But as I said, that's the minority.
I want to talk to you about this. You did a thing with your graduate students. This is a quote. You were quoting a Chinese proverb: "Action will remove the doubt that theory cannot solve." Action will remove the doubt that theory counts. Anybody that's an activist trying to get more human rights for all sorts of groups, or just feeding children and old people dying in dignity is what I say. You did a workshop with your grad students. How did that go? What did you do? What sort of actions did, just if you don't mind, if you remember for
yes, certainly. In fact, that has to do with the roadmap to the a better society. I think first I asked my students, what are your hopes for the future, say the next 5 years? And so I think we first need to ask people questions about their vision, to envision hope for a future that's visceral and powerful and attractive and beckons us. We need that. We need that to motivate us. So once we have the vision, then I ask students, well, what could block us? What could be the obstacles, the contradictions that would stop us from achieving that vision? Third part of the workshop was, well, okay, so if that's where we want to head in 5 years, and if these are what could block us, then what are the strategic directions that can deal with those obstacles and take us in the direction of our vision? But then the final part of the workshop is the action plan. And that's where the students said, oh, that's why we did the vision and the analysis of obstacles and the strategies. Now it comes down to where the rubber hits the road. You know, what am I going to do Monday? Who am I going to work with the party, with my nonprofit, with my colleagues? I'm going to speak out. I'm going to write. I'm going to act. I'm going to care for the vulnerable. And so it's that when we see the action, when we're engaged in the action, that motivates us, reminds us that we can do something. We are doing something, moving toward the vision, using along the lines of the strategies to deal with those obstacles. Does that make sense?
Yes, but what's not clear are the we need concrete actions. We're really not as bright as we seem over here. What can we do? What can we do? What can Steve Williamson gets in his little red SUV tomorrow, and what can he do?
But if I understand, Rob, we're supposed to come up with the stuff ourselves, Mike. I mean, you're supposed to come up with the Mike solution.
Yes.
I'm supposed to come up with
the method. It's a technology participation methodology that the Institute of Cultural Affairs developed. It's a facilitation method, and I've used it all over the world with corporations, governments, the UN, villages, slums. But yes, you ask people, hey, Mike and Steve, what do you hope our country, Arizona and the U.S. will look like in 5 years? You know, and really get out your, not your cynicism, but your dreams, your hopes, and then, what could block us from that? And then what would be the strategies? And then finally the actions.
So let's take Mike. Why don't you ask Mike, where do you want to see Arizona in 5 years?
I think it's a great exercise. On the other hand, I think it's what you would be fighting, Robertson, in a class, or what you're going to be my genetic predisposition, I've been told, it goes to the depressive. I mean, there's something about Italian men that are really negative guys. So I see is angry, hungry students, hungry because they're paying back student loans of a trillions of dollars, and nobody cares.
But do you want Arizona to be in 5 years, Mike?
I think that's where we're going to be. We're going to have empty classrooms. We're going to have religious strife.
Where do you hope?
Where do you hope it will
Arizona
be?
Will okay, be.
Okay,
it's
okay,
not
okay,
where
okay.
do you
I know
think
we're
everything
using,
goes wrong. Where do you hope? What's your dream? What's hope. Your best dream for Arizona?
First I hope Jameson's goes to $5 a shot. But after that, I hope that teachers get a 20% raise.
Hey, yes.
You know, I wrote a letter to Governor Ducey last night, and I said, Doug, 7% a year for the next 3 years will make Arizona the premier educational, because we already have these wonderfully creative people that work their butts off for nothing. They have incredible ideas. They know how to do the work, and they do the work. Now you need to pay them before you're losing them left and right. So 7% a year. So that's what I see.
So that's your vision, Mike. That's my vision.
7% teacher raise.
Educational system. Then what could block that? What's an obstacle that could block that vision?
The Charles and David Koch.
Okay. And what is this? The strategic direction that we can take to deal with the COVID money?
What we're finding, hopefully, is that no matter how much they spend, that your predictions come true, that right will triumph over wrong, and that the arc of history does bend toward justice, and that there are billions of dollars won't matter, because Steve and I still have the power to pass a petition. Tom Tabak lets us on the air, and so they will not triumph no matter how much. There isn't enough money to keep this from happening.
There you go. And you've just gone into the actions, the petition. So you went from your vision of a superb educational system to the bad money, and then the you will continue speaking. That's a suspend the action of a petition. So that, as I said, I've used that with corporations, governments, the UN, villages. My students learn that methodology, you know, asking people questions. But why? Because when people participate in creating their own plan, what, they're motivated, they get excited, they get energy.
That's true.
They say, it's ours, it's mine, it's not yours, it's not somebody told us what to do. So that's why I really believe in these participatory methods.
So I have to admit, one of your questions, I think it's important, I want to answer, and now you've given me the answer. You said, how can we unify the Democrats? The GOP, the Republican thugs, are so well organized, like thugs tend to be, by the way. The brown shirts are just, you know, and they're therefore they seem very effective. I'm certainly in media coverage of the, they are united. They, if you go off script, you're banished from the fold. And Democrats, like I said before the program, we pride ourselves on our disunification. But I'm serious. We are, well, in a way, it is a plus. We are a big tent. You know, if McKenzie down at, and Dina Rabada, she wants more daycare. And, you know, I couldn't give a crap about daycare, but everybody, you know, it's an important, but I think the unification, the Democratic unification is going to come from the participation. I'm having a meeting April 17th in Cottonwood, Arizona at the Red Rooster Cafe for Democrats. I had 60 people show up last time.
Excellent.
We're going to do small group. I mean, you know, I was a school teacher. And, you know, and it's funny, you become, when you're leading a group, you become, I don't want to say a little Stalin, but certainly you become, all of a sudden it's all about me and my wisdom. And, but this time we are going to work with small groups. They are going to have a voice, and we are going to take this new progressive group in the Verde Valley, in the middle of this hotbed of Republicanism, and they are going to define the role. And the first thing I hope they do is get rid of me as a leader and get somebody younger and a little, more informed and dynamic, and forget that thing I said about Jameson's. I want it to go to $2.50 a shot and $2 for a Budweiser.
So Rob, when you're talking about a roadmap to a better society, it starts with having the vision of what a better society would be and having people talk, like, personally what they would like. And you begin to work from the very general personal, where do we want to go? To what's stopping us to get from how we get there to what can we do to get around the roadblocks and stuff? So let's take the Koch brothers, and we're going to have Samantha Parsons from Uncoke Our Campus here on April 23rd to talk about how you uncoke your campus. but how do you get around the – Is it sort of Taoist, or do you just sort of flow around the rocks in the road, or do you take them on, or is there a single strategy?
No, it's always varied. Sometimes you go around, sometimes you go over, you go under, you go through, you redefine the problem. That's why when you get a group, so you get 30 people in a room and ask them what strategies could deal with these obstacles and get us to the vision. It's incredible, the creativity, and then you gestalt and you group the ideas into, say you start with 50 ideas and then you group them eventually into 5 strategies. And the strategies are powerful, you know, and then you create your action plan of what, when, how, where, who, you know, and it works. You know, as it's action removes the doubt and you can unsolve it. And Mike, what you said, I'm really inspired by what you're doing. And Mike, that's why I said that your show and what you're doing as activists. And I think we're going to, as you said earlier, the only way that we know we're going to lose is if we give up. If we burn out, if we get distracted, if we become apathetic, if we become cynical, if we become despairing, then we're sure we'll lose. But if we keep encouraging ourselves and others, we keep at it. We keep renewed, and I have a lot of ideas about how to, you know, keep yourself fresh.
Yeah, that's the question I have for you, Rob, is like, how do you personally, and how do you recommend recharging your activism so you stay involved? Because what I hear, even from people I talk to, a woman came up to me and said to me, I was listening to your Nancy McLean show, and it scared me so much I turned it off, and she's about to Koch brother. So an awful lot of people, what I hear, particularly from non-political people, from people in the arts and just regular folks, is that the situation, they don't even want to hear about it. They stopped listening to the news. They're turning out. How do you keep going, and what would you suggest to people to keep fresh in this?
Okay. It's so important. We've got to take care of ourselves and our fellow and sister activists. If we don't, we burn out or succumb to despair, distraction, apathy. So some of the ways I found that are most powerful to take care of myself and my colleagues, and in my final chapter of the book, I identify 7. Cultivate understanding and compassion every day. So every day I'm trying to better understand myself and the world, and see where I can relieve suffering in my own, with my wife, my grandkids, but also my community, my country. Also to realize that happiness is not a goal, but it's the way to live, that we are grateful for our lives, you know, that we're in it for the long haul. We say, I am committed to my vision, my values. Okay, the Koch brothers have their vision, you know, of authoritarianism and extracting oil. I don't agree with these gentlemen, and so I'm going to continue speaking and writing and working. So it's that long-haul perspective, you know, the commitment for life. Until death do us part, you know, this is it. And to keep choosing courage, because it takes courage, you know, because we worry, you know, am I going to get hurt? Am I going to... So, and then...
You've worked in some physically fairly scary places, if I understand.
I've only been robbed a couple times, and unfortunately I've never been beaten up or attacked, but, you know, I mean, the world, it's anywhere. It can be in the west side of Chicago, or it can be walking down a village lane, but that's not what it's about. You know, that's just life. But here I lived 73 years. That's pretty good. So I'm worried about the young people, and I want to help them. But they're giving me courage. You know, these kids in Parkland are just amazing. They're so articulate and intelligent, and they want to relieve suffering. You know, they really... So some of them are practical. Let me get very practical. What I do every day and every week, this is what I recommend because I know it works. Some of this stuff. I meditate every day. Every day, you know, I sit and meditate. Very helps me a lot. I write in my journal every day. So I keep reflecting and thinking. And what am I feeling? What am I thinking? I stay in touch with kindred spirits, you know, like you guys. You know, I stay in touch with... I walk in nature. You know, nature is healing. Nature will restore us. I care for the people nearest to me. You know, that's why I want to live in North Carolina near my grandkids. Even though I care for the whole world and my whole country, I've got to, you know, help the grandkids grow up and inspire them so they have the best chance. And then, you know, I want to also care for those furthest away as well as nearest. Also, I want to practice patience, practice kindness, practice generosity. And that's hard, you know, when you're married, you know, every day you have to practice patience, right? You know, your spouse is practicing patience with you, and you're practicing patience with her. And so it's practice.
I'm going to read from an article that you wrote February 20th, or at least it was published February 20th. So one of the things I do when we're talking, this is you speaking, one of the things I do every morning is remember who I am and what I am about. I express gratitude for my life and for life itself. I articulate my vows and intentions. I remember those who have gone before me and those I love. I stand before the really real and rededicate myself to a life of compassion and understanding. I find that this is the most important thing that I do all day long. It is my action before action. In that moment, everything is realized, and I am at peace and ready to know and do and be all that I can be. Not a bad morning workout, dude. I mean, I don't know. Instead of staring at the girl in this, in the pants and the, what do they call them? Yoga pants. Thank you.
How do you guys take care of yourself? Because you're still carrying how do you take care of yourself?
I'm going to hang on to my response because mine has to do with that 250 Jameson. Tom already knows where I'm going here.
That's okay.
And I make a lot of jokes about alcohol, but I like to believe I'm. But I like to hear Steve's answer.
Before I do that, let's take a minute to remember Paul Schwartz, a dear friend of the program. What we call a red diaper baby from New York City.
Never heard the term.
Quite a supporter of progressive causes. And he's a guy who got knocked down and things didn't work out in his politics and he came back again, revived.
Perfect example of what we're talking about here. This, Paul acted. He was on, I don't know, three or four boards. He was doing, he is the reason Paul Schwartz, we would argue, not argue, we had great times talking about the differences between Italian and Jews. I mean, and then we found out there is no difference. The only difference is one drives an Oldsmobile and one drives a Buick, is what he would say. There is no difference. And I'm saying, well, I don't think, but anyway, he is the reason that little group I did already use airtime to tell you about in Cottonwood. He is the impetus of this, and yet he came into the bar. He bought a round for a number of progressives that just happened to be in the bar that day, and including the owner of our meeting place, the restaurant where we meet. He brought in his action. He brought business cards. I mean, he did a really good job. He brought little Democratic business cards, handed them to the bartender with her name on them. She's a member for life. She would do anything for us right now because Paul Schwartz walked into a bar and gave her a business card with her name on it, and then it said,
the Yiddish term is he's a real mensch.
He is a mensch for sure.
He'll be dearly missed. He died recently. Yeah. Died on a hike in Point Reyes, California.
Surprising.
Yes. It's just a terrible shock to us, but beautiful place, beautiful man, incredible character, solely be missed. I think since I've been young, in terms of sharing, recharging, is always been out walking in nature, Rob. That's been my key. And I've gone on and off of meditation, and I go to retreats. So I do think that there's a roll up for spirituality and religion in politics. I don't have any particular advice on people and what they should do, but nature's been a help for me. I think one of the things you mentioned too is sort of gratitude and being grateful for our lives, because our lives are so troubled and there is so much suffering and there's so much conflict and there's so much that's just sort of unresolved, and we face uncertainty every day. When you get our ages, you don't know whether you'll be here tomorrow. But I think that in the end, I think if you feel gratitude for your life, it's really hard to go around and be nasty and hateful towards somebody for some reason, that's my thought.
Wonderful.
Well, that's true.
Beautiful, Steve. And when the supporters of the current administration, we should not hate them. We should try to understand them, where they're hurting, what they believe, what they're committed to. Where are they right? Where are they wrong? And how can progressive values and programs help some of them? Some of the administration supporters are realizing they are not getting what they thought they were getting at all.
Yeah, I understand them to some extent, Rob. So my question to you is, even if I kind of understand it, because I worked with a whole bunch of these guys for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Even if I understand them, Rob, and I understand, say they're Christian nationalists, do you have ways to relate to that? So I don't get into just arguments with them and they yell at me and stuff like that. But how do we relate? It's an impossible question. How do we relate to people who we disagree with so much?
Yes, I like what Mike said. You know, well, some of us drive Oldsmobiles, some of us drive Buicks, but we're all human beings. I like to go to that commonality of, you know, we're all human. We need food, shelter. We love our kids. And if we can relate to people on a human level, not an ideological argument, in our community, what do we hope our town will be like in 5 years? And it's, you know, people won't just talk about guns. They're going to talk about, well, we need a preschool or a clinic or a, you know, so I think focusing on what unites us as human beings, the commonalities, that I find is really transformative.
But suppose I want to go back to the 50s, Rob. I want to go back to the 50s. I want the white culture that I knew. I don't even hate people of different cultures, but I want the United States to be run as a Christian white nation, controlled by Christian white men. That's what I want. And how do you talk to somebody who genuinely feels that quite deeply?
Well, you can explore that with them. You know, what does that feel like? What are your concerns? And maybe you'll find some common concerns. If they're concerned about morality, they're concerned about. So I think, and I frankly, I would not, I think we shouldn't spend our energy trying to convert our neighbors who are white racists or believe the billionaires will save us or are neo-Nazis or are evangelicals. I think we need to call out false news and lies. We need to support the courts, news organizations. We need to put our energy into getting out the liberal and progressive vote rather than to trying to change minds. Some of them may change, but we have to focus on getting out the vote. So to me, November 6th is sort of my sacred day this year. You know, that's the most sacred day of the year is November 6th.
Yes.
So I'm focused like it was a laser toward November 6th.
Getting out the vote.
Right. And yeah. Seeing things go if the source of so much of our suffering and so much suffering is political, then November 6th becomes that. I want to get the name of the book is when we're talking about a compassionate civilization. The urgency, which I'm looking at the words a little more closely. The name of the book of the gentleman we're speaking to today, Robertson Work, A Compassionate Civilization, The Urgency of Sustainable Development and Mindful Activism. And the mindful activism I was talking to an elementary school teacher the other day that teaches mindfulness to her eighth grade students in such a way that it has become a, an endearing part and an important part of her class. And certainly, not only she believes for them, but for her to, survive and for her to have some, satisfaction in her job. She gets lots of satisfactions, and one of them, as we mentioned, isn't money. But the mindful movement is very exciting. And for you,
I agree with that. I think that's an important subtitle that you put in there, because activism, I saw a lot of bad activism, Rob, from the 60s all the way through, angry, distorted stuff. Well, we've got 1 minute.
Oh, yeah. We want to talk about Democrats of the Red Rocks. Speaking of unification, Democratic perspective is supported by DOR, Democrats of the Red Rocks, as one of our. We want to make sure that we have Robertson Works This podcast will be on vbid.org. Please check it out in a few days. You can re-listen to what's going on.
Listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN.